This is Storytime, brought to you by Mary Washington College and this radio station. Hello, boys and girls. This is Peter Moonbeam, back again to take you on another trip to Storyland. Are all of you here tonight? Good. Now, I want everybody to climb onto their stars. We're going to Never Never Land to visit Cinderella, and a very good friend of mine, Pat Jones, is going to tell her our tale. Are you all ready? Good. Close your eyes real tight. Think of what a sky looks like when it's filled with stars. Wish real hard. And away we go! Hello, boys and girls. My name is Pat, and I'm going to read you a story about a girl named Cinderella. Once upon a time, there was a girl whose father and mother had died, and who had gone to live with a family of wealthy relatives. It displeased them that they should have her in their home, and they treated her very badly, though she was the sweetest, best-tempered girl that had ever lived. The lady of the house was proud and disagreeable, and she had two daughters who were very much like her. They made their poor relative work in the kitchen, washing and wiping the dishes, and she had to sweep the floors, scrub down the stairs, and keep tidy the chambers of the mother and her daughters. She had to sleep in a garret on a wretched bed of straw, while the rooms of the two sisters had polished floors and curtained beds and mirrors so large they could see themselves reflected from head to foot. The poor girl bore her troubles with patience and never complained. When she had finished her day's work, she used to sit in the chimney corner among the ashes and cinders, and so the sisters nicknamed her Cinderella. But in spite of hard work and shabby clothes, she was 100 times prettier than they were, decked out in all their finery. It happened, after a time, that the king's son gave a grand ball, which was to continue for 2 nights. He sent invitations to all persons of fashions for miles around, and as the two young ladies made a great figure in society, of course they were asked to attend. "We shall certainly go," they said, "and perhaps we may have a chance to dance with the prince." So they were wonderfully busy choosing such dresses as would be most becoming, and they could talk of nothing but their fine clothes day in and day out. "I shall put on my crimson velvet gown with point lace trimmings," the elder announced. "And I," the younger sister said, "shall wear my gold brocaded gown and have a circlet of diamonds in my hair." Their preparations made no end of work for Cinderella, who was kept constantly engaged in plaiting ruffles, sewing, arranging bows and ribbons, and in washing and ironing the sisters' linen. But she helped willingly all she could, and on the first day of the ball, she offered to dress the young lady's hair. They were glad to have her do that, and while she was brushing and combing, they said to her, "Cinderella, don't you wish you were going with us?" "Yes," she answered, "but so grand an affair is not for such as I." "You are quite right," they said. "Everyone would laugh to see a ragged kitchen girl there." When Cinderella finished their hair, she helped them put on their ball apparel, and never before in their lives had they been arrayed half so becomingly. Indeed, they were so delighted that at dinner time they could hardly eat a morsel. And besides, it would not have been easy to eat much anyway, for they had laced very tight to make their waist as slender as possible. What they had said to Cinderella about the ball set her to thinking how nice it would be if she really could attend it. Finally, the sister's mother chanced to come to the kitchen where Cinderella was at work, and the girl asked to be allowed to go to the ball. "You?" the lady exclaimed. "Why, you are wearing the only dress you have, and just look at it. What could put such an idea into your head?" "But see here," she said, taking up a dish of peas that was on the shelf. "I will throw this basin full of peas into the ash heap behind the house, and if you can get every pea picked out of the ashes in an hour's time, you can go to the ball with my daughters." Then the lady, followed by Cinderella, carried the peas out and threw them into the ashes. "Here is the basin," she said, handing it to the girl, "and you can go at your task as soon as you choose." She returned to the house, and Cinderella stood looking at the ash heap. "I could not find all those peas in a week's time," she sighed. "I must have help," and she began to call. "Hither, hither, through the sky, all you little songsters fly. Come, I beg, and help me quick. Hasten, come, and pick, pick, pick." At once a great number of little birds came chirping and fluttering to the ash heap, and they scratched and picked while Cinderella held the basin for them to drop the peas into. One by one they brought them, and in a short time she had all the peas. Then she carried them into her mistress, overjoyed at the thought that she now could go to the ball. But the lady said, "No, no, you haven't clothes. I spoke in jest before. You shall not go, for you would only put us to shame." Evening came, and the two young women set off to the ball. Cinderella watched them until they were out of sight, and then stood in the doorway weeping. At this moment a good fairy appeared and asked her what was the matter. I wish, the poor girl began, but her voice was choked with tears. "You wish you could go to the grand ball in the king's palace," the fairy said. "Indeed I do," Cinderella agreed, wiping her eyes with her apron. "Well then, stop crying," the fairy ordered, "and I will contrive that you shall go not only this evening, but tomorrow evening also. Run to the garden and bring me a pumpkin." Cinderella hurried out and brought back the finest pumpkin she could find, though she could not imagine what the fairy wanted of it. But the fairy took a knife, scooped out the inside of the pumpkin, and then touched the pumpkin with her wand. Immediately it was changed into a splendid gilded coach. "Isn't there a mousetrap set in the storeroom?" the fairy asked. "Yes," Cinderella replied. "Go and see if there are any mice in it," the fairy said. Cinderella soon returned, bringing the trap with four mice inside. "Lift the trap door a little and let the mice come out," the fairy told her. And as they escaped, she changed each one by a tap of her wand into a fine dapple gray horse. "Now we need a coachman," the fairy said. "There's likely to be a rat in the trap in the cellar, if you could make a coachman out of it," Cinderella suggested. "That's a good thought," the fairy responded. "So look at the trap without delay." A few minutes later, Cinderella returned carrying the trap, and inside was a rat with a tremendous pair of whiskers. A touch of the fairy's wand changed the rat into a fat, jolly coachman, on whose face were the smartest whiskers ever seen. "The next thing for you to do," the fairy said to Cinderella, "is to go again to the garden. You will find two lizards there behind the watering pot. Bring them hither." No sooner had Cinderella returned with the lizards than the fairy turned them into footmen with lace liveries, and they skipped up to a seat at the back of the coach just as naturally as if they had been footmen all their lives. "Well, my dear," the fairy said, "here are your coach and four horses, your coachman and your footman. They will take you to the ball. Are you not pleased?" "Oh, yes," Cinderella answered, "but must I go in these shabby clothes?" The fairy smiled and tapped her with a wand. At once her rags were changed to a dress cloth of gold decked with costly jewels. That done, the fairy gave her a pair of glass slippers, the prettiest in the world. "These slippers I give you to keep always," she said, "but the other things are enchanted for only a short time into the forms they have at present, so you must not on any account stay at the ball after midnight. If you do, the coach will become a pumpkin again, your horses mice, your coachman a rat, your footman lizards, and your beautiful clothes the rags you wear every day." Cinderella promised the fairy that she would not fail to leave the palace before midnight, and drove away in an ecstasy of delight. When Cinderella arrived at the royal palace, the guards and attendants were so struck by her magnificent carriage that they supposed her to be some rich princess. At once the carriage was surrounded by courtiers who assisted her to alight and conducted her to the ballroom. The moment she appeared, all voices were hushed. The violin ceased playing, and the dancing stopped short. Everyone was admiring the stranger's beauty. "How handsome she is! How surpassingly lovely!" And similar expressions were heard on all sides. And the old king whispered to the queen that he had not seen so comely a young lady in many a long day. All the ladies busied themselves in considering her clothes, that they might have garments of the same pattern, provided they could find such rich materials and seamstresses capable of making them up. The prince came forward to receive Cinderella, and he so admired her beauty and manners that he promptly offered her his hand to dance. She was pleased beyond measure by this gracious reception and by the splendor of all she saw, and she danced with such grace and animation that the onlookers were charmed. The proud sisters, in whose home she had lived, were vexed to have anyone attract more attention than themselves, but they did not recognize the ragged kitchen girl in the superb garments she now wore. A fine supper was served presently, and the young prince helped Cinderella to every delicacy, yet ate nothing himself, he was so absorbed in gazing at the fair stranger. Time passed swiftly, and she never looked at the clock until 11:45. Then she rose in haste, made a low curtsy to everyone, and retired in haste. Her coach was ready at the door of the palace, and she jumped into it and drove home as fast as she could. On arriving at the house, her coach, horses, and servants all disappeared, and she found herself clothed in her old tattered gown. She waited by the fire for the return of the sisters, eager to hear what they would say, but determined to tell them nothing of her own experiences. At length they came knocking at the door, and when Cinderella let them in, she pretended to yawn and rubbed her eyes as if she had been waked out of a nap. "How late you are," she said. "Late," one of the sisters repeated. "You would not think of its being late if you had been at the ball and seen the handsome princess who was there." "What princess was she?" Cinderella asked. "What was her name?" "We do not know her name," was the reply, "nor does anybody. The king's son would give a fortune to learn who she is. If she is so beautiful as to have made such an impression as that, how I would like to see her," Cinderella exclaimed. "Oh, my Lady Charlotte," she said, addressing the elder sister, "do lend me the yellow dress you wear every day. I want to put it on and go to the ball tomorrow evening and have a peep at this wonderful princess." "What? Lend my clothes to a common kitchen girl like you?" Miss Charlotte cried. "I wouldn't think of such a thing." Cinderella expected to be refused and was not sorry, for she would have been very much puzzled what to do had the yellow dress really been lent to her. On the following evening, the sisters again went to the court ball, and shortly after their departure, the good fairy came to Cinderella and told her to prepare to go also. A touch of the fairy's wand served to clothe her even more richly than she had been clothed on the previous occasion. The carriage she had used the night before conveyed her to the palace, and she was ushered into the ballroom with every attention. Great was the joy of the prince to see her, and he never left her side the evening through. He talked so charmingly that she forgot all about the time and had no thought that midnight was at hand when the clock began to strike 12. At once she sprang up and ran as nimbly as a deer out the door. She was going in great haste down the broad staircase that led to the palace entrance when one of her slippers dropped off. The clock had reached its final stroke and she could not stop to pick up the slipper. Then in a twinkling she was a gay lady no more, but only a poor kitchen girl hurrying down the steps. The splendid coach and four horses and the driver and two footmen had all vanished, and on the ground lay a scooped-out pumpkin, while four mice, a rat, and two lizards were scurrying away to find hiding places. Cinderella reached home quite out of breath, and of her grand apparel nothing remained except the little glass slipper. When the sisters returned from the ball, Cinderella asked them whether they had been well entertained and whether the beautiful princess was there. "Yes," they replied. "We enjoyed the ball very much, and the princess was there, but she ran away just as the clock struck 12, and the people who were at the ball have no more idea who she is than they had before." When Cinderella fled, the prince had stood in amazement a moment, and then pursued her. She was too swift for him, but as he was running down the stairway, he noticed the little glass slipper that she had lost, and he picked it up. Then he went on and asked the guards at the palace gates whether they had seen a princess drive out in a grand gilded coach. "No," they said. "The only person who has passed out of the gates for several hours is a ragged girl just gone, and how such a person as she happened to be in the palace, we cannot imagine." During the following days, the prince caused inquiries to be made everywhere for the princess, and when the search failed, he grew ill with disappointment. Then the king, who dearly loved his son, called a council and asked his ministers what they thought ought to be done in order to discover the princes. "It is my advice," the chief minister said, "that you should cause a proclamation to be made all over the kingdom, and that the prince will marry her whose foot will just fit the slipper he found." This plan was adopted, and the slipper was tried on by all the princesses in the neighboring kingdoms, but in vain. Then it was tried on by all the noble ladies near and far with no better results. Afterward, it was carried from one fine house to another among the gentry, until at last it came to the home of the proud sisters. Each of them did all she possibly could to thrust her foot into the dainty slipper, but their attempts failed. Cinderella, who was present, laughed and said, "Suppose I were to try?" The sisters ridiculed her. "What a foolish notion to think of that dainty slipper's fitting your clumsy foot," they exclaimed. But the gentleman who had brought the slipper looked at Cinderella and said, "It is no more than fair that you should have the chance you suggest, for I have orders to let every young maiden in the kingdom who pleases try on the slipper." So Cinderella sat down, while the sisters looked on contemptuously. They were amazed when her foot went with ease into the slipper, which evidently fitted like wax, and their astonishment increased tenfold when Cinderella drew the mate to the slipper from her pocket and put it on the other foot. Just at that moment the fairy appeared, and touched her wand to Cinderella's clothes, making them once more the robes of a princess. Then the two sisters recognized her as the beautiful stranger whom they had seen at the ball. Now the gentleman who had brought the lost slipper conducted Cinderella to the royal palace. She was received by the prince with great joy, and in a short time they were married. After that, they lived happily the rest of their lives. Well, that was the story of Cinderella, boys and girls. Have you had any black-eyed peas lately for dinner? You know, those funny little beans with a black mark. Now I'm going to tell you how those beans got those little black marks. A bean's laugh. Once upon a time, there was a poor old woman who lived all alone in a quiet little village. One day, she had a dish of beans which she wished to cook for dinner. So she took some wood and coal and made a fire on her hearth. In order that the fire should burn better, she put on a handful of straw, but she dropped one piece of straw on the floor. After the fire had begun to blaze up brightly, the old woman hung the pot over it. Then she got the beans and poured them into the pot. But one of the beans fell on the hearth without her noticing it and rolled away beside the piece of straw. Soon afterward, a coal jumped out of the fire and joined the straw and the bean. "Dear friends," the straw said, "where do you come from?" "I sprang out of the fire," the coal answered, "and it is very fortunate that I did, for had I remained, I should have been burned to ashes." "I also have just managed to save myself," the bean said. "If the old woman had succeeded in putting me into the pot, I should have been stewed without mercy, exactly as my comrades are being served now." "My fate might have been no better," the straw remarked. "The old woman has turned my brothers into fire and smoke. She took up 60 of us in a single handful, and all the others have lost their lives. Luckily, I contrived to slip through her fingers." "What shall we do now?" the coal asked. "Well," the bean responded, "as we have all been so fortunate as to escape death, my opinion is that we should leave this place before any new troubles light on us. We might become traveling companions and journey into foreign lands." This proposal pleased the two others, and forthwith they started on their travels. Before long, they came to a little brook. There was no bridge across it, and for a while they could not tell how to get to the other side. Then a good idea occurred to the straw, and he said, "I will lay myself across the brook, and you two can walk across on me." So he stretched himself from one bank to the other. The coal, who was of a hasty disposition, at once trotted out on the new-made bridge. But the straw bent so beneath his weight that he began to be afraid of the rushing water down below. Halfway across, he stopped. He dared neither to go farther nor to go back. All the time, the straw was sinking under his weight. Pretty soon, the straw broke, and they both plunged into the stream. The bean had prudently remained behind on the bank to watch how the coal got across before trusting himself to such a slender bridge. When he saw his friends get a ducking in the cold water, he could not help laughing, and he laughed and laughed until he split his side. Things would have gone badly with the bean, then, had not a tailor presently come strolling along the borders of the brook. "Please, sir," the bean said, "I need your help. I wish you would mend this break in my side." The tailor was a kind-hearted fellow, and he sat down, took out his needle and thread, and repaired the mischief. "I thank you, sir, with all my heart," the bean said. The tailor had done the work very neatly and had saved the bean's life, but it so happened that he had used black thread, and from that time to this, every bean of that kind has a little black stitch in its side.
That was lots of fun, Pat. We thank you very much for telling us the story this evening. Boys and girls, I hope you had fun on our trip and that you enjoyed the story. I hope that you will be at your radio next week at this same time so that you can journey with us on our next storytime trip. I think next week will be especially fun. All right, boys and girls, climb back onto your stars. Everybody on? Good. Close your eyes real tight and wish. Go on, wish, and away we go! The reader for tonight's program was Pat Jones, the engineer was Quincy Carter. The selections for this evening were Cinderella and A Bean's Laugh, taken from the book Bedtime Wonder Tales by Cliff Johnson, published by Couples and Leon Company. Storytime is produced by the Mike Club Student Radio Organization at Mary Washington College in cooperation with this station and was tape-recorded in advance at the College Radio Center. Your producer for tonight's Storytime was Quincy Carter.
Beloved of all carols, and the symbol of Christmas, Silent Night, will now be sung by the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. We hope that you have enjoyed this music as much as we have. And now, we at Mary Washington College wish to extend our good wishes for you and yours in this joyful holiday season. Thank you.